Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Your outpost for the week is freshly delivered, and I am just one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as she is always, the wonderful witch, Drea Kaufman.
Hello!
Why, hello there. How are you?
I'm good. I feel like my life is getting a little, I don't know, Harry Potter consumed, in the sense that, like, all of the adulting things I do, I start to wonder if they have to do in the Harry Potter universe. So, for example, we did our taxes today. And I'm wondering if they have wizard taxes that people have to, like, take care of every year. I'd have to imagine they do. But just a random thought of how the inner workings of the wizarding world work. Do they?
I can't imagine a government wizarding that doesn't income has taxes, you know? So... yeah, how about they do?
Yeah. So just my little tidbit for the day.
Well, as everybody ponders that, let us know what you think. You can find us on Twitter at Join Nerd Party. You could hit us up on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty. Let us know under the show when we post it. You can also find us, of course, on iTunes. All the shows that we do on the network are, of course, on iTunes. And while you're there, help out... Outpost. Help people find the show by giving us a star rating review. Really means a lot to us, but also just means other Harry Potter fans, when they're searching for Harry Potter podcasts, we're one of the first ones that come up, the more reviews that we have. So just let us know what you think, and then we'll say thank you on the show and read everybody your review and tell everybody what you thought of us. So,
I mean, everyone should wonder if wizards pay taxes. I mean, that's just so important for everyone.
It is so important.
Who reads Harry Potter to be involved in.
They have to. I wonder if it's easier, though, to do it because you can just do it magically somehow, you know? Like, there's a taxing spell, you know? Like, that would be great, right?
Expecto taxonum.
Yeah, there you go. Totally works. And then, of course, you can find us over at thenerdparty.com, where if you'd like to send us an email, go to thenerdparty.com/contact, choose Outpost, and that email will come to Dre, and I will be able to converse with you that way. So, this is a momentous occasion, Drea, as we are finishing The Prisoner of Azkaban, and we have Owlpost again.
Yay! I love when the chapters are named after our show. I love when our show is named after the
It's
chapters.
Like she did that on purpose.
I know. Something like that.
Yeah, I mean, or we did it on purpose. I mean, let's just not quibble about who did what, you know? Who named
let's
after who?
Let's not fight
who.
Semantics here, guys.
Yeah, come on. But it is super fun, and... this chapter obviously starts right where the other one left off, and Hermione, we kind of are immediately thrown back in the idea that they are back in time right now, and they have to get back up to the infirmary before Dumbledore locks the door, and so they are rushing to get back, and I love the whole... interchange as they're trying to sneak around and like they're trying to get around professors that are going in places, and then Peeves comes around and of course they're worried about him, you know, giving them away, and it's just like the whole thing is very stressful here at the beginning as they try to get back.
I love in this part though how while they're talking, I think it's
Fudge talking to Snape, probably what you're looking for.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I love how Fudge is talking to him, and he's like, "Oh, I'm sure once Harry comes too, he'll want to thank you, and you know, they'll want to have an interview with you." And Snape's just all smug and full of himself, and we all know what's already happened, and we know none of that's going to happen. But I love like thinking that Harry's going to come too and thank Snape. Like that's just so outlandish. And I find it funny that Snape doesn't even seem to realize how outlandish that is. Like he's just like, "Oh, well, of course he will." You know, like it's funny.
Well, and I love that Harry overhears that and he's just like gritting his teeth, like he could murder somebody right now. He totally would. But I love when they get back to the door, because it's even better than it is in the movie, where Dumbledore sees them and he's like, "Well," and they're like, "We did it. We've got Sirius and Buckbeak," and he just—it's the way she describes it. He's beaming at them, and it like there's just something about the way she writes Dumbledore that you can just tell when like the sun is shining out of him, you know, how proud he is of his kids, you know, and this is one of those moments, and it just kind of makes you feel all warm and gooey inside, like a good brownie, and it's awesome. And then of course, you know, he locks them in to the room so that it's like they never left, and it's just there's a couple moments like this in the this last chapter with Dumbledore that just really warmed my heart.
I do. I really like the interactions we get with Dumbledore in this chapter. I do prefer the approach the movie took only slightly in this part, in that he sort of goes like, "I have no idea what you're talking about." I sort of wish he had that deniability aspect going forward. You know, like because he has some idea, you know, he's very coy when he sends them on this little adventure. I sort of wish that coyness continued like it does in the movie, where he pretends like he knows what they did without them saying anything. It wouldn't really play out as easily, or at least that he didn't acknowledge what they did until later in this chapter near the end, where we get some more sort of heartful moments with him. I sort of really liked that moment where he's coy in the movie versus in the book, where they get to tell him everything they did. But I do like how, I agree, like he's beaming and so excited for them and so proud of them. And I didn't really understand the idea of locking them in the room until I read the rest of this chapter, because I'd completely forgotten what happened in it. And I like that he locks them in there and then it kind of gives them an alibi, if you will.
Yeah, because the very next thing is Snape just like tearing back up the stairs, and he is yelling at everybody about how Potter had to have something to do with it. And he's just the worst. And he's unhinged at this moment about how mad he is. And Madame Pomfrey is not happy because somebody else is storming into her infirmary with these sick kids who've just been all through this. And this is a scene that would have been awesome, I think, in the movie. Like, the fact that you don't get this confrontation between Snape and Harry, as well as Fudge and Dumbledore being there, is just fantastic. Like, this is fantastic, you know? And Dumbledore's just kind of like, what's going on? And Fudge is, like, appearing angry, and Snape is obviously just furious, and wow, it's such a great scene because, yeah, they do get away with it, you know, and they pull one over on Snape and he knows it, and there's nothing he can do about it. And it's just kind of awesome.
I love when they win, if that makes sense. Like, I love when they win.
It's so funny because the Madame Pomfrey's like, "I've been with them ever since you left." And Dumbledore's like, "I mean, there you have it, Sirius. Unless Harry and Hermione can be in two different places at once, I don't see any, you know, point of troubling them any further." You know, just like, it's so awesome because he is so mad. And the Fudge is like, "That fellow seems quite unbalanced. You'd better watch out for him, Dumbledore."
I find it interesting, though, because you have to imagine that some of the teachers and or some of the ministry staff know that Hermione has a time turner, because the whole thing is she had to, you know, McGonagall gave it to her and wrote a letter to the ministry to get her permission to use it. Like, someone knows she has a time turner. And while you probably can't prove she used it, like, his argument could have some merit. Like, but we don't know who knows that. I feel like that's a teensy little plot hole that she's overlooking, you know? Snape could have been told so that she made potions on time. Fudge could know if he had to approve it. I don't know. It's just interesting. I feel like it's a slight, tiny plot hole that we're going to chalk up to bureaucracy and red tape. But
Which, you know, honestly, not really that big of a plot hole when you think about it.
In the grand scheme of things.
I mean, how many things probably fall through the cracks in our government? Just think about
it. Oh, yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
Well, and the fabulous part of this is Dumbledore saying, oh, he's not on balance. He's just suffering from severe disappointment.
It's like the most understated fact of all time.
Oh, it's fantastic. Well, and what's interesting is I totally forgot that they address the fact that Dumbledore saying, well, you know, you can remove the Dementors now. You're going to take them away. And Fudge is, oh, yes, yes, yes. And then he says, you know, I never dreamed that they'd, you know, try to administer this kiss on an innocent boy completely out of control. And then he's like, maybe we should think about dragons for the school entrance. And Dumbledore's like, Harry would like that. And it's just this great conversation, though, because it's doing something here, and it's something you're going to want to pay attention to, because that conversation about the Dementors is going to come back in later parts of this saga. So I think that just she's so good at dropping these little things that will actually become something later on. It's so well done.
I feel like that needs a hint, hint, nudge, nudge. Like,
yeah. Wink. Hey, guys, just pay attention to that because you want to remember that one. So I love that, though. I it's always one of my favorite things about, you know, the series is the way in which she drops these little things for you. And I think that's fantastic. And I also thought it was interesting, too, because I totally forgot that there's so much time at the castle before school ends, because they still have their finals to take. And this is also where we find out, you know, because everybody's kind of like, they're getting ready for finals, but they're all hanging outside and because it's warm and everybody's kind of enjoying it. And we find out that, you know, of course, Snape has let loose that Lupin is a werewolf and he's going to be leaving. You know, and we get that reinforcement of the fact that if everybody knew he was a werewolf, they would not be happy with, you know, Lupin teaching their children. And we kind of get that one last reminder that the Wizarding World, there are some serious prejudices still,
yep,
especially against something like a werewolf, which, you know, there's a balance here. And I like the way that even Lupin talks about this too, because he even says, you know, I could have really hurt somebody the other night. And it was because he had forgotten to do what he needed to do, which was take the potion. And so I like that he takes responsibility for that. Even though I obviously think, you know, it's unfair, him being treated like this. But there is the other side where, yes, I mean, you know, he is a werewolf, and if he doesn't take his potion, yeah, he could really hurt somebody.
I find it interesting. I find a lot of people have chalked up Lupin being a werewolf to the parallel of AIDS, to people who have AIDS sort of being rejected from society, even though they're perfectly fine to interact with on an everyday basis, you know, just talking to them or shaking their hand. Like, you're not going to contract any sort of disease doing that. There's no reason for them, but there's sort of this like social pariah that comes with that diagnosis. And I remember reading something a while ago about how her werewolf character is kind of supposed to be a similar homage to that. And in that sense, I feel like this portion sort of lines up and sort of doesn't. I mean, I think, you know, I can totally see a group of parents not wanting their kids to be interacting with a teacher who has AIDS.
Right.
Like, I can totally see that happening. But then there'd really be nothing to own in terms of self-care for AIDS in the school. I mean, you own the health and the disclosure of that with your partner and that sort of thing. But like, there wouldn't be really the other side of that there. So it sort of deviated from that for me here. And I kind of knew that going into this section and reading about him. And, you know, I always kind of think of that when I watch this movie too. But I did find it really, commendable that he did own that and was like, I could have hurt you guys and I don't want to put you in that situation. And I'm going to avoid this sort of like, you know, negative press, if you will, for me being who I am. In this case, I think he, in the book, he deviated from the movie a little bit in that in the movie, they really stress the fact that Dumbledore stuck his neck out to get Lupin the job to begin with. And we knew, he knew that he became a werewolf and, you know, he encouraged him to be there. And, you know, everyone was like, well, Dumbledore will take the heat and help you out. And his response in the movie is like, he's done enough. You know, I'm going to take this on myself, sort of like self-sacrificing almost, if you will. And in this case, you kind of don't have that side of it. It's more just like, it's come out. I'm getting ahead of it. I don't, you know, it was a different approach. And I really liked this better in the book. I liked that he sort of didn't make a big thing of it. You know, he didn't want, it wasn't about not inconveniencing. It wasn't so mopey, I guess. It was more like, this is the decision I've made. I'm moving on. I don't, you know, I'm going to get ahead of this so that we don't have to deal with it versus kind of reactionary, like I felt like in the movie. So I'd be interested to see if anybody else sort of had a similar feeling or reaction to it in that sense. But for me, that's kind of where I went with it. And I enjoyed this better. I felt like this was a more honorable way to leave and a less like mopey way to leave.
Yeah, I feel like part of this to me, and I like the way you're putting this, but I think part of this to me is we really do, I think, get Lupin here. He understands the life that he has, and he understands the way and the reason that people would feel that the way that they feel. And I think that that is something that is very honorable of him. Like, he can put himself in other people's shoes and say, okay, I understand why is that a family would feel this way, you know? And I find it interesting, too, because I do think that there is a piece of this in the film where... I do find that there is a piece of this, I think, where I think Lupin doesn't want the fight.
Yeah.
You know,
he's just tired.
You know, and I think that's something that is that's very understandable, and I think it's really well written. Like, I appreciate that she writes it like this, because I think it makes it much more, in a lot of ways, like you said, it's honorable and believable. And like the whole thing here is, again, I feel very much and very strongly she's a good writer when it comes to people taking responsibility. You know, the good characters that we see in here, the ones that we should look up to, are the characters that, are ones that take responsibility for who they are and their decisions. And I really think that that's it's a fascinating and beautiful thing to see them do that. And so I really appreciate that she works so hard here to make Lupin a character who is that kind of character, you know, because it makes you excited to see him, you know, again, down the road, and what she's going to do with him. And she has some seriously interesting things to do with Lupin in down the road. You know, this is a character that we will see again. And that's, to me, that's one of the coolest things. So won't give anything else away about the character, but it is fantastic that we will see him again. So, yeah, I just really, I love their conversation too that Lupin and Harry have about, you know, the fact that, you know, oh, I saw you coming, the map, I went and got the invisibility cloak, I give these back to you, I don't feel no guilt about doing that. And the whole thing about him also complimenting him on his Patronus. You talked about this, like, who knows that Harry produced the Patronus? And he says, well, what else could have driven those Dementors back? you know? So we get confirmation here that other people do know that it was Harry who drove off the Dementors that night. And so I really thought that was something that was... Harry has a lot of great moments here of connecting with people that he's grown very close to. And you can tell for Harry, this is very difficult. He does not want Lupin leaving. Lupin has become somebody very special to him. And the fact that he is having to leave is really sad.
It is terrible. And it's not anything that we really like to admit. It has to happen. And it, you know, at this point, we kind of don't know that he's coming back, but we kind of get an idea that he's coming back. But it is like a touching sort of closure moment for Harry. And I sort of feel like it feeds into the theme of Harry's life, really, in that a lot of times when he gets something good or he gets someone he's close to and he loves, they leave him. You know, his parents left him. Sirius leaves him. Lupin leaves him. He's got this sort of like theme of people leaving him. He should have the world's biggest abandonment issues at this point. If you remember, I think it was the start of the start of the second book. He thought all his friends had left him.
Yeah.
He didn't get any letters. You know, he's got like these horrible abandonment issues. So it's interesting to see her continuing to feed into those, having now Sirius have to leave him and Lupin have to leave him in this book. She just keeps feeding that fire, making you feel even more sorry for Harry.
Yeah, you know, I think the thing that makes this so special is we get the fact that they also talk about his dad again. And the whole part about him, you know, giving back the map and everything. And he says, you know, Harry's like, you know, you mentioned that they would want to lure me out of the school because they would think it was funny. And he says, you know, I have no hesitation in saying that James would have been highly disappointed if his son had not ever found one of the secret passages outside the castle, and that there's this mischievousness about his father that Harry does have, like that's a part of him, and it's not a bad or a good thing, it just is, you know, like this is one of the ways in which they are very similar. And it kind of like, it's one of those moments here in this chapter where you're just like, oh, because you kind of feel, I felt the weight of Harry never going to meet his parents, you know? Like, this is the thing that I really like about this book, is that I feel like that you finally feel the weight of Harry not being able to meet his parents, because we finally feel like we kind of know his parents a little bit now through the people who grew up with them. So it's not just kind of this nebulous thing anymore. It is something much more real, especially here with his father. And we've had a lot of father figures for Harry in this story specifically. I think that's one of the interesting things about this book, is that Harry has a lot of father figures in this one, you know, with Lupin, with Dumbledore, with his own actual father. And then, of course, with Hagrid in some ways kind of has that part with him, and Sirius, you know, so he gets all of these father figures, and sadly the only one that's still around by the end is Dumbledore. He's the
of
only
the
one
story?
Yeah, at the end of the story he's the only one who's left still, and that's not a bad thing. It just is, that's just the way it is, and it just, it is really sad to see poor Harry in this position, you know, where all of these great father figures have just, you know, they've left. And so he doesn't have them around. Luckily, he does still have Dumbledore, which is great. And it is something that's going to be very important throughout the rest of the series, is the fact that Dumbledore will be kind of the constant father figure in this book, in this series. And actually, there will be another one that kind of rears its head just a little bit in the next book too, as we spend just a little bit more time with the Weasleys.
Yes.
So that'll be something that'll be fun, but we have to wait.
Well, and we get a little bit of that too, even at the end of this chapter. You see that, yeah, he's lost Sirius, but then she sort of teases you and brings back the fact that he's not quite gone yet, you know, and he was
right.
Has in fact been looking after her, Harry, a little bit. And I love, love, love that Hermione gets a little vindication in this chapter.
Yeah.
Not only does this is like the chapter of Hermione, to be honest. Like she you know, saves the day with a time turner and keeping Harry focused. And then at the end of the chapter, we get a little letter from a little tiny owl that just sounds like the cutest thing I've ever seen in my entire life. And turns out that she was correct. And Sirius had, in fact, sent the broom, the firebolt, to Harry, you know, and it was kind of an apology for, you know, missing 13 years of time with Harry. And, you know, I love that he sent Crookshanks to pay for it.
Yeah, that's great.
Like, I just love that he like was using Crookshanks. Yeah, it was really good. I really enjoyed it. I like how it wrapped up, and I like that we get to see a little bit of that sort of paternalness in Black come out.
Yeah, you know, that's one of the interesting things, I think, is to see how Sirius Black really has been taking care of Harry and how much he loves him, you know. And I think this is one of those things, and it was a little bit funny, you know, as we were talking last week, and you're like, how does Harry trust him? And that's a little bit weird, you know, and like, you know, here we kind of had the vindication of realizing Harry, that Sirius is that kind of guy. And so I really do like that. I also think, you know, the other really big thing that we get in this chapter is the conversation between Harry and Dumbledore about, but it didn't make a difference, you know? And I love that, you know, one father figure leaves and the other, the one that's going to be kind of constant throughout the series for Harry, and Dumbledore is there in Lupin's office, and they have this conversation about, you know, what happened. And first, they talk about Trelawney actually making a prediction that mattered, which is very interesting, because they talk about this whole idea of that Voldemort's servant was going to return before midnight, and that they would come back to power, and Harry's like, is it my fault then? Like, that Voldemort might come back, and like he's freaking out, and Dumbledore, you know, reminds him, he's like, and this is what I thought was interesting, is she uses time travel, the fact that they've been time traveling in this book, to talk about, hasn't that taught you anything, that the consequences are of our actions are always so complicated, so it's very difficult to predict the future, and what you did tonight is going to have consequences. And he says specifically, one of the consequences is that you sent back to Voldemort somebody who owes you a debt. And that kind of magic is not something Voldemort, one, knows very much about, and two, probably not something he would want to know, that he has a servant that is in debt to the person he hates the most. And so I just thought that was fascinating, the way she tied that all together, and she really made all of these pieces, I think, make a really important point that is going to be a key to the rest of the series.
I took it in a slightly different way. I appreciated it, and I see where you're coming from. It's really interesting. I'm sort of processing it because I do think that's an incredibly good observation. I think when we get to the end of book 5, 6, Order of the Phoenix, five. When we get to the end of book 5, I think the conversation we're having right now will make more sense. Like the conversation about Trelawney and predicting the future and you know, I love how Dumbledore is like, well, maybe I should give her a raise, you know?
Well, and because he mentions the fact that she's down, she's had two prophecies now.
Yeah.
So she does hint at the fact of what you're talking about.
Right. And so it'll be interesting to see those things play together. And I almost took it as not only is predicting the future hard, but I took it as once it's sort of predicted, it's not changed. Like, you know about time travel. You've traveled through time. You know that you can't change some of these things. And I feel like almost the same way we talked about having Harry and Hermione know what happens and be there, and that there's witnesses that they can't change those things, right? They can't go and interfere in things that have already kind of definitively happened. I feel like it's almost similar to that in that once the prophecy is made, there's pretty much nothing you can do to avoid it coming true. Like, it's going to be a self-fulfilling thing, just dependent on how, and it just, the difference is it'll happen, but what it's going to look like is kind of what's up to, you know, free will, you know, which I think definitely will play more in book five. So I'm trying not to say too much to ruin that. But I feel like in this sense, it's almost one of those things like where you talk about, and I'm going to apologize if I offend anybody here, but when you talk about going to a psychic and they tell you things and they come true, like, it's self-fulfilling. Like, a lot of times you look for that now. You're looking for that thing to come true that you were told about. And so, you know, the same thing here, I think a little bit, like, it could have been anything. It could have been someone else. If it wasn't Peter Pettigrew, it would have been another person who decided they were going to follow Lord Voldemort again. And, you know, I feel like any way that you played this, it was going to come true. And in this case, they just happen to be witness this happening and are aware of how that happened. So that prophecy sort of happened regardless of whether Harry did anything or not. And to Voldemort's point, or not Voldemort, I'm sorry, Dumbledore's point of, hey, you've done time travel and you already know, like, there's nothing you can do. It was going to happen inevitably. And I like his spin on that, though, is like, almost like it's going to happen inevitably, but I'm really proud, and your dad would have done the same thing, of how you chose to act in that situation. And for me, it's where we've talked about a lot of the differences between Harry and Voldemort. Voldemort may have made the decision to kill Peter Pettigrew, being in Harry's shoes, knowing he could have tried to prevent the prophecy, whereas Harry wouldn't make that decision, because the right thing to do, even if it's going to let that prophecy fulfill itself, was to let him live and let him come to justice. And it sucks that he got away, but Harry did the right thing. And the fact that Dumbledore believes that and pointed out that Harry's dad would have done the same thing, I think was, for me, like, the most impactful part of that book was, and your father would have done the same thing. You know, like, you are, if your dad was in those shoes, he too would have done that. So he's basically saying you made your parents proud too. So,
yeah,
my little soapbox there. But
No, because I think it all comes down to a prophecy we can't talk about at this exact moment.
Yeah.
And
I can't talk about it quite yet.
Right. And I think that's the thing that is so interesting about it, is there is a lot of truth to everything that you're saying. And man, I wish we could talk more about it at this exact moment, but we can't. So,
but we'll come back to it in book five.
Right. So, and it's interesting because I do think, you know, I think that it really is a both and to what we were both saying. Like, it's both of those things, and I think that's what makes it so fascinating, is the fact that this whole idea of time travel and moving through things and all of that, it's tricky. And I think that's where, you know, what Dumbledore said in the past about, you know, not to dwell on dreams and just forget to live. Don't get wrapped up in all of this, in that sense. Just focus on the here and the now. And whenever you get to that place, you may be glad that you saved Peter Pettigrew's life. And you probably will be, because it's a type of magic that is the most deep and the most impenetrable, is what Dumbledore says. So I think that's a really brilliant thing to be able to know. And it also again, it's setting up, like you were saying, this dichotomy between Harry and Voldemort. And it's something that just keeps building and building throughout the series until we get to the very end where it all comes together. And I can't wait till we get that moment. So, yeah.
Remember what she does with this in the book. Like, I can't remember where this whole storyline with Peter Pettigrew goes. So I get to do this for the first time with all of you guys, too. So yay, because my memory is shot. So
yeah, it's pretty good. I also really love the whole fact about they talk about James and I like that because I hadn't read this chapter yet, even though I have read it before last week, and that Dumbledore pretty much says the same thing that I said about the whole Patronus and the fact that his dad was there with him and that, yeah. You know, you Prongs rode again last night because of you, because you found the piece of your father that lives in you and it came out. And for that moment, it was almost as if he was alive again. And wow, what it's like a, okay, whew, all the feels, because it's such a beautiful, again, I think that this is one of the things that this made this book so special to me in the Harry Potter series, is that it is the moment where Harry is slowly becoming an adult, where things in his life are really coming to a head, and there's a beauty of connecting with family like that, you know, and even for Harry, who, you know, his parents are gone, but connecting with those who love you the most and would die for you and or have died for you, and the way that he's getting to do that, I think, is so beautiful, and what I love is that Rowling seems to be all about this idea of family, right? But she also recognizes that not everybody has a perfect family because tragedy can hit and bad things can happen. And we'll see that in a few people. We might see that in some of the other students we get to know better. But we do see that in Harry. And all of these people are coming around him and we see how they are filling the void that got left when his parents were killed. And I think that that's a beautiful thing, but it's still him finding ways to connect with what he lost is gorgeous. So she does it so well.
She does. And it's nice that, you know, from the character standpoint, that he has someone who, I don't want to say can understand what he's going through, but is trying to connect him to the thing he knows he's missing. Like, Dumbledore maybe can't necessarily understand, and he can a little bit, which we'll get to much, 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 much later,
much
down
later.
The road. Much, much later down the road. You'll all probably get to it in the Fantastic Beasts movie before we get to it here in the book. But, you know, he understands that all Harry wants to do is feel connected with his family again, and that's the only thing he can't do. And so instead of just feeling sorry for him, Dumbledore does everything he can to remind Harry of how much like his family he is and how much you make them proud, and tries to remind him of things and not just like, oh, they're not here, but they would be proud of you. And this, you know, your dad was with you and you are like your parents and, you know, like things like that.
Right.
He does the things that most people don't know how to do in terms that are comforting to Harry. They're kind of scary and real deep, but they're comforting. So from a character standpoint, it's just the perfect thing that anybody needs. It's that perfect thing you need to hear that, you know, you can't explain what to somebody, but it's exactly what Harry needs to hear. So it's a real heartwarming note to end the book on.
It's gorgeous. And I love the way to that we get the fact that, you know, Harry is going to have something to look forward to. You know, he is going to be able to look forward to getting to go to the Weasleys and get to go to the Quidditch World Cup. Like, it makes it so exciting that the way this book ends leaves you wanting the rest, you know, like you cannot wait to see what you're going to get in that next book. And it is super exciting. And so
I was just going to say the very, very last note we get left with on the book, we are reminded that he has to go back to the Dursleys now, mm-hmm. after we sort of had this bright light of maybe living with Sirius. We know that can't happen. He has to go back to the Dursleys, but I love that he finds a way to cope with it. in that he gets something and, you know, Uncle Vern says, like, who's that from? And he goes, the godfather. And he goes, you don't have a godfather. And he's like, well, yes, I do. He's a crazed maniac murderer who's out on the loose and loves me to death. And he just has this little smile. He's so proud of himself. Because Uncle Vernon or Uncle Vern looks so like terrified. I just love every once in a while that Harry finds a way to be like, don't mess with me. And that's how we end. It makes you feel not so bad for him having to go back to the Dursleys. That he's finding a way to fight back in his own way.
Yeah, no, I love that you said that because I was thinking about that moment and it really is, I think, one of the best moments in this book. And I loved it. I absolutely loved it. And I loved the fact that, like you said, Harry found the way to make sure that, you know, they treated him well, that they were again. What I love is that Harry found a way to make them treat him nicely.
Yes.
You know, while he's there. And I thought that was great.
Or at least a way for them to not pick on him.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And I think it's something that's, you know, it was one of those moments where it's like, wow, Harry really is a smart kid. You know, and he's found a way to take care of himself, but it's because other people have come around him so that now they've allowed him to be able to take care of himself. I don't know. Does any of that make sense? Like the fact that it's because other people are there that he can do that. And I think that's kind of beautiful is that what it shows is how we really do need people in our lives, you know, and we are meant to be there for each other. And I think that's one of the coolest things that she does in this series is the way that she shows how people are necessary for each other.
Well, and how they're not... Well, how they're necessary, but mostly how they make the right people will make you a better version of yourself, right?
He yeah.
is able to stand up for himself because other people have taught him his self-worth and have taught him how and have shown him that it is absolutely 100% okay that he stands up to these bullies, because we'll call them bullies, that's what they are, and says, this is me, this is who I am, I deserve respect, at least on a basic human decency level.
Yep.
And, you know, and the only way he knows how to do it is by sort of, you know, passively threatening them because they don't understand anything else, you know. And it's that beautiful moment where he stands up for himself and you just want to like, pull, you know, throw your arms up and mm-hmm. blow through a little horn and be like, woo, and cheer him on, you know. And you know, it's because he's got that wonderful support behind him and those people who love him and support him and will, you know, have his back. If they kicked him out or something like that, there's 1,000 places he could go. And mm-hmm. you know, there's several places he could go and feel supported and loved still that would take him in without even a question. So it is an amazing part, a real small, small part of this overall book, but it's so important. And it's just like a nice little reminder of the lessons we've learned and a subtle way of putting that in there. So,
yeah. I mean, I think one of the things that's so kind of beautiful about it is that she does such a good job of kind of growing up Harry in this book. You know, like you really feel the weight of how much he's grown in this series now. And specifically just in this book, like I feel like that's one of the neatest things that we get here. And it's my favorite. I think it is probably my favorite part of this story. Is the way that in this book, she really allows the character to come into his own. And I think she does it so well and with such ease. I don't know. It's hard for me to not gush about this one because it is my favorite. But what I love about it is that she really has elevated her game in this story. And she's, I think the thing about this one, and this, I don't know if you felt this way when you first read this book. So let me know. But I remember reading this one and just feeling like, okay, this is the game changer for the series. This is where everything changes. And I don't necessarily know what to expect, because I feel like this one was the one that was, it was like that pivot point for the whole series. I don't know. Did you feel that way when you first read this one?
I feel like that happens for me at the end of the next one. And when I first read through them, I feel like this leaves you with a different Harry. Like, it left me with a different Harry. It left me with a more confident and mature Harry. Like, I definitely agree that Harry did some growing up in this book. But for me, the real turning point is the end of the next book, because I feel like that's when sort of everything changes and goes out the window. But I do agree that I think this is the turning point where Harry, I don't feel like Harry's a kid anymore. I don't think I got that my first read through, but when you're saying that, I definitely agree with it. Like,
yeah,
this is the turning point for me where Harry is no longer a kid in my eyes. Like, he is now, I feel like, got this sort of like adult ownership of things, and a little bit more confidence, and a little bit more, he's going to be a little more vocal going forward. He's going to be that sort of thing.
Yeah, there's a definite change in, I think, his character, because he's had to deal with some pretty big things in this one. And so I guess
he's had to be a bigger person in this one. He's had to be the adult a couple times. He's had to, you know, the first book, you know, he meets Voldemort for the first time that he can recall. You know, the second book, he deals with sort of being ostracized due to rumors, which I think is something a lot of people can deal with. And he deals with almost losing a really close family friend, you know, in Ginny. And then in this one, I think you start to get inklings of pieces where he gets introduced to real adult struggles with, you know, being pulled into the whole what happened for real with Peter Pettigrew and Sirius Black, and kind of gets a taste of the drama between the previous generation with, you know, Prongs, Padfoot, Mooney, and Wormtail. You know, like, you kind of get, he gets introduced to the cliques and what things were like for his parents at Hogwarts. But, you know, I feel like we're slowly shifting, but I feel like he really had to grow up in this book. But I think for me, the whole thing sort of changes at the end of the next book, which I won't say why, because I'll ruin it for everybody.
I think that makes complete sense, you know, why it would. And I get that. I think, too, that's also probably the answer that a lot more people have in general. So, I mean,
I think it's the more obvious change. It's it's the plot change.
Yeah.
You know, you go into five and all bets are off. So,
yep. Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that one of the things that this, you know, for me, this is the book that I kind of really just enjoy coming back to and reading. One of the most. I absolutely 100% enjoy this one. I think that the way that she does the story in this one is really amazing. And I think one of the things that I love about it is just watching her storytelling really come to life in a way that you might not have seen, you know, before. But I really do think it comes to, there's just something about the way, I mean, this, the way she tells this story is fantastic. It's a whole new, I feel like her storytelling just gets deeper and better as we get into this. And that's what's kind of exciting going forward, is I think it's going to be that way again. Because the next book, as you said, is one that's huge. And I think it really does. It does. It changes everything in it. One of the things that she does in that next book is she just makes the world a much bigger place.
And writes 300 more pages.
Yes. And that's really, I mean, I honestly, it's cool. So I'm super excited to get there. Any last thoughts about this one, Drea, as we wrap it up?
No. No, I'm good.
Awesome.
Yeah, I liked it. I liked the book. I liked the book a lot more than I liked the movie. I think mostly because that darned CGI werewolf kind of ruined the movie for me. But I might be alone. Or you can go see this, listen to the 602 Club on that one. But yeah, no, I'm sad to see Time Turner go. Excited to see Goblet of Fire get started. Mm-hmm. So
yeah. No, I'm totally right there with you. Like I can't wait to dive into the next book. And I'm super excited that we get to soon. So, you know, make sure that you join us for that. And Drea, if anybody wants to catch up with you before, we get a chance to dive into that, where can everybody find you?
So if you want to come give me your theories on wizarding taxes or really anything else dealing with Harry Potter, you can find me on Twitter at PCFChick or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's COFFMAN.
Well, and you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. I'm on Instagram under the same name. You can also find me here on the network doing aggressive negotiations with John Mills as we talk all about Star Wars. And then, of course, you can also find me on the Trek FM network, talking about the Orb with Chris Jones. As Drea mentioned, the 602 Club, where it's our general geek show. We have covered all the Harry Potter movies as well as the first Fantastic Beasts, so you can check all those out and everything else that we're doing over there. And I do a show called Cinema Stories with my friend Courtney, and we talk all about film through the lens of faith, so I hope you will check that out as well. But thanks so much for checking your outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.